Thank you. Good morning, everyone. Thank you for joining us today. I'm Pooja Gohel, Company Secretary and Compliance Officer of Apollo Finvest India Limited. On behalf of the company, I warmly welcome you to our Quarter 3 Financial Year 25-26 earnings call. Joining me today are Mr. Nikhil Innani, Managing Director and CEO, and Ms. Diksha Nangia, Full-Time Director and CFO of the company. They will take you through the company's performance and key highlights for Q3 FY 25-26. If you have any questions or insights during the call, please feel free to raise your hand or share them through the chat box. With that, I request Mr. Nikhil Innani to take this proceedings ahead. Over to you, Nikhil.
Perfect. Thanks a lot, Pooja. Just allow me a minute. I'll share my screen and then, we'll get going.
Sure.
Is my screen visible?
Yes, it is.
Perfect. All right. So firstly, thank you everybody for taking out the time this morning to spend that time with us and allowing us to kind of take you through the progress that we've made in the last quarter as well. So without any further ado, let's get started. So here's a quick snapshot of the financials over the last quarter or so, right? As we can see, basically there's been sustainable profit growth, like we kind of try to deliver every single quarter. There's been an uptick as well in terms of ROE. So things moving along in the right direction. And we can also see some of the numbers ahead which support that the underlying metrics are also positive. So with that, I want to talk about the portfolio quality, because ultimately what's a lending business without great portfolio quality, right? And we've always kind of stressed on the fact that we try to always have the top tier or the top 5% portfolio quality, as compared to the rest of the industry. And our numbers kind of really double down on that, right? So some of the numbers that we are really kind of happy about is obviously the GNPA number, which is almost half of the industry, and also the 30 PAR numbers, right, which are almost 7 to 8x, substantially smaller, than the rest of the industry. Actually, it was almost 15 to 18x, lesser than the rest of the industry, right? So that's a significant, kind of differentiator in terms of our portfolio quality versus, the rest of the people, which are present in the digital lending space, in India. The way we've kind of gone about this is something that we've spoken about in the past as well, but I think some of the things which are now, coming to fruit is, all of the partnerships that we've been, doing over the last 1 year. As we've kind of stressed, our philosophy has been, really kind of understanding the space by, doing a few, term loan or, warehousing financing loans with, some of the best players in the industry. With our where, our focus is primarily ticket sizes, which are, less than 2 lakh or so, in terms of, the amount. The main reason for that is fundamentally we feel like those are the kind of loans where, doing digital underwriting kind of makes sense. I think anything above 2 lakhs does go into, the phygital territory in terms of, the trade-off between doing it digitally versus doing it phygitally. So I think our focus has again been in, trying to partner with the best, the retail name players in the fintech universe. And because of that, I think a lot of our partners have graduated from us, basically giving them term loans or warehousing financing loans to now us doing, BC or co-lending partnerships with them. Because of this, obviously our, retail exposure has also quarter on quarter, gone up almost, 2x in terms of size, right? And we're expecting this momentum to kind of continue and, hopefully over the next, few months or quarters, our retail book should be, largely significantly, in the 70-80% category of our entire AUM. With this, obviously, one of the surprises, that we kind of want to talk to you about today is, the new adventure that we've kind of embarked on over the last 2 3 months, I would say specifically, right? So this is something we've been asked about really over the course of almost the last 8 9 years that we've been on this adventure. That when will you guys go direct, and why aren't you guys going direct, right? So I want to take some time out about to talk about exactly what we're doing, and why we're doing what we're doing, and how we're doing all of these things, right? So I think our strategy overall in terms of digital lending has been for the following, right? I think when digital lending kind of got started in India about 8 9 years back, right, I think there was a big question mark about whether digital lending itself would work in India, right? Would it be that the old school ways of underwriting are the only way to underwrite, or is there any, or was there any credence to basically underwriting people purely digitally, and also at the same point in time make money out of this, right? I think the industry itself took about 5 6 years to figure out this business model, and during that time period, I think our philosophy was largely to be a platform, right, where we essentially worked with many many players out there, where our again our focus has been retail side of digital lending, again ticket size of less than 2 lakh or so, where we basically worked with the many many fintechs, right? I think at this point in time we must have worked with more than 80 plus fintechs really over the last 9 years that we've been doing, and it's purely been like a observing and learning exercise for us to firstly understand what are the kind of loans which kind of work, what are the kind of business models which work, and most importantly, what are the kind of loans which don't work, and what are the kind of business models which don't work. I think one trend that we observed over the last 2 to 3 years is especially the digital lending guidelines of RBI, right? What pretty much happened after that is, in conjunction with two obviously the interest rates essentially increasing across the world pretty much, was that equity became at a premium, and obviously RBI became very very strict about not allowing too much FLDG or first loss guarantee in these businesses, right? Which really meant that the risk had to be controlled, and with the tightening of equity, it mean that meant that the business models have to be kind of sensible. So one of the good things that we observed over the last basically couple of years is that not only has the industry contracted in terms of number of players, but I think it's expanded in terms of overall AUM. At the same point in time, now we see at least four or five players out there, which are actually having double digit ROEs, and at the same point in time, obviously by that matter of fact, kind of delivering positive portfolios, which are actually good quality, and at the same point in time, managing their risk really well while growing their book as well, right? So for us, I think it's been an exercise in kind of working with these people, and at the same point in time, figuring out what really works with these platforms, what's the best way to go about interacting with them, and while we've kind of done partnerships with them, worked with them very closely, done on-site kind of interactions with them, we've had a lot of learnings. And I think with Apollo Cash, the goal is really to execute on those learnings. And the way we'll be going about doing that is, first is, hiring really people from, players that we've been impressed with, number one. And number two, at the same point in time, finding people in the industry who have, done this for easily like 5 plus years, and, getting them on board at Apollo, specifically to, do pretty much the same thing that they've done in other industries, or specifically in this digital lending industry, but the same role really to, kind of help us, scale up exponentially, right? So while we're very, very early when it comes to Apollo Cash, I think some of the things that I'm expecting right now is, probably, the contribution of Apollo Cash in the next 12 months towards our AUM should be, sub maybe 5-10%, right? But I do expect this to be a very, very large part of our story, in, in the next 2 3 years to come, essentially. And a lot of our hiring plans are being influenced by investing in the future of Apollo Cash, And I do expect, our employee expenses to go up as a result. But, it's all an investment, towards the future, which we are pretty confident that, we will be able to crack. And, this will be a real, this will be a really a big star for us to be able to, grow this exponentially, over the next few coming years, right? That being said, I think, a lot of the things that we are doubling down on, obviously, is, fraud and risk specifically, right? And how do you go about and do that? I think one of the big evolutions which is happening in the fintech industry is, really getting access to, I would say authentic banking information, right? And that's largely due to account aggregator. I think before the industry was relying upon, PDF statements, which unfortunately, or you could say fortunately now with AI, you can, come up with really big fraudulent ones. But I think, thanks to a lot of, initiatives from the government and the banking industry, I think account aggregator has now become, a good avenue for us to get authenticated data. So that's very, very useful. And in fact, we've already done 30 plus crores of disbursements using AI-driven underwriting, right? So it's very much, in full flow at, Apollo. I think other things that we're also deploying, not only in Apollo Cash, but, across our partnerships is a lot of learnings are, I would say, cross-pollinating between the two, businesses, right? Because what we learn in partnerships, we deploy in Apollo Cash and vice versa as well, right? So I think, not only are we learning about a lot of interesting signals that we are getting, right? Things like, device data, SMS data, people's app usage, right? Indicators about, how old SIM cards are as an example, right? And one of the big learnings has been for us that especially when we're giving out retail loans, just primarily using, things like bureau and, AA as an example are just not enough. You need access to device and SMS and, telco information because that really provides you real-time information about, what is happening in the customer's life. If you think about basically, bureau data, right? One of the big problems with bureau data today is that, the data, no matter which bureau you pull from, is at least 60 days old, right? And in a credit-hungry economy like India, and especially when we are focusing on the kind of, borrowers that we are focusing on, right? Which, tend to be, somewhat well-versed in using, I would say digital lending apps, right? Which are, pretty fast and furious in nature. I think a 60-day lag is, largely unacceptable, to be very honest, right? So we want to get access to the very last second of what's happening in a customer's life. And, thanks to getting the device data and SMS data, we're able to parse through a lot of that, using AI as well to figure out, what's the best way to segregate this data and turn that, unstructured information into structured signals as well, right? So this has been absolutely super duper powerful for us, right? To be able to differentiate between firstly, fraudulent was a non-fraudulent. And I think that's a big part of the game, which, not a lot of people talk about, but I think, that's actually key, right? Because fraud is not really risk, right? Because when it comes to fraud, it's either one or zero, right? Either the customer pays or he doesn't pay. With risk comes after fraud, because there you're trying to figure out, is this customer in a capable position to borrow? If he can borrow, how much can he borrow without being over-leveraged and being able to pay that, sustainably as well, right? So there are multiple layers to kind of figuring this piece out as well. Finally, a lot of our investments, like I said earlier, have gone towards, building a very, very capable team. Obviously, I think over the last few years, we, are privileged to have some team members who've been around in the company for a while, right? So I think, the compounding of knowledge, essentially from being in the same space, in the same industry, really, really helps because, I really feel not only in this industry, right? But I think pretty much in any industry, having, people who've been doing the same thing for multiple years, it does help significantly. And especially, I think, in a space which is relatively new in the grand scheme of things, which is like digital lending, I think, this is a really, really niche skill set. So we've been obviously nurturing our existing talent, but at the same point in time, hiring people, from I would say companies that we are familiar with and who have a solid exposure in digital lending. Because, when we add those kind of people into the system, it not only gives us, added knowledge, but also helps us, move forward quicker. So we expect, this to continue happening. And, we expect, a few more hires to come in, from, companies within the industry, companies that, we really like and respect, to add, onto our knowledge layer, which will, kind of help us, really dramatically scale up, over the next, 24 months or so, especially with Apollo Cash. So with that, I want to, kind of, pause and obviously allow, questions to come in. Thank you so much, again, and we'll open it up now for questions.
Yeah, thank you so much, Nikhil, for sharing your valuable insights of the company's performance. We will now open the floor for questions. If you have a question, I would request you to please raise your hand so that our host can make you a speaker. Then you can unmute yourself and share it with the group. Sure, I can see Ms. Mridul Joshi has raised her hand. Host, please unmute Ms. Mridul Joshi.
Hello. Hello, am I audible?
Yes, you
Yes,
are. Please go ahead.
Thank you so much. Thank you. I hope everybody is doing well. I have two questions. Firstly, as you mentioned, and I also have been following, right? For the past 3 quarters, on your website, you've been ramping up partners and term loans as well. But term loans, as I recall correctly, are from 6 to 12 months. So, like, what time frame do you expect when our disbursals, AUMs and revenues actually, show some growth considering the liquidity easing that's been done by the RBI as well? Secondly, as a partner, besides funds, what additional features, benefits or tech does Apollo Finvest provide to the partners? Because funds can be provided by any other NBFC too, right? So what other features does Apollo Finvest bring to the table? These are my two queries.
Perfect. Thank you so much, Mridul. So I'll answer the questions. I think, the first thing is, as you rightly pointed out, I think for the last couple of quarters, we have been mentioning, that we are, kind of ramping up on our retail partnerships, starting with, either getting into a term loan with them, or doing a warehouse financing structure with them, all for a period of around 6 to 9 months, preferably, right? So for us, essentially, the last couple of quarters has been to try and examine a lot of these companies very, very closely. And that's something which you can do only by, doing, a structure like warehouse or, kind of doing term loans, because that's what allows us access to a lot of data about those companies and really, kind of getting, under the belly and understanding, whether these companies are something that we want to double down on or not by doing BC or co-lending partnerships, right? Like, that's how we think about, term loans. And because of that, I think one of the things you must have noticed, as we pointed out, in today's earnings call, that our retail book overall has almost grown, 200%, right? I think that's all a function of a lot of the, partnerships that we ended up doing, which were, starting wise, maybe warehouse or, co-lending, sorry, warehouse or term loans in structure, right? So I think, in terms of the second question that you kind of mentioned, which was on the lines of revenue, right? I think for us, basically the focus isn't, revenue, because I think we always kind of think first in terms of profitability, because revenue is a purely a function of kind of business model, right? Because as an example, if we do more BC and, BC or, just lead gen partnerships, right? Our revenue will ramp up, but if we do co-lending partnerships, your revenue won't ramp up. Right, because there's a difference in the way, commissions are given out, structurally, which RBI has kind of directed, right? So I think, revenue is not really the right way, I would say, to examine at least a business like ours. I think profit is the right way. So we kind of think about it internally that, revenue, I mean, it's very easy to, inflate revenue in such businesses, to be honest, because you can just, basically end up doing a BC partnership instead of a co-lending partnership, and then your revenue kind of jumps up, right? I think what we try to do is focus a lot on, you know, the bottom line. So that's how I would think about that. And I think bottom line is, you know, for us a function of, you know, purely ramping up AUM right now. And we've been kind of focused first on, you know, first finding the right partner. And we always kind of go slow with every partner, right? Because we don't want to go in and directly deploy, you know, a lot of money in the first shot, right? We kind of observe people's books and we want to be really, really sure about, you know, risk isn't something that we're very worried about, but, you know, other things, other softer things about the partner, right? How are they de to deal with, or how are they to work with, right? I think those are things that we have to kind of, you know, examine over a couple of quarters. And once we have that comfort, then we start slowly kind of deploying more and more capital. I think that being said, right, I think two things which will definitely happen, you know, in the coming quarters is, one is, you know, we are obviously looking to, you know, take on debt as well to obviously scale up. And at this same point in time, we are looking to obviously make, you know, some key hires as well, which will, like I said, right, will increase our expenses. But it is all investments I see towards, you know, the future of Apollo Cash especially, right? I think that to me is something which, you know, we feel can have a huge multiplier effect in terms of, you know, where this company kind of goes over the next, you know, few years. Did I miss any point?
Hello.
Yes.
Yeah. I'm so sorry. I couldn't understand just one small thing that you said. You know, the as Apollo Finvest as a business model, you know, you can't directly look at revenue.
Yeah.
So, you know, could you please, if you don't mind, explain me that small point? Like, why is profitability a bigger chunk of focus and not revenue?
Yeah, because I mean, I'll explain to you, right? Like, if you think about, you know, term loans, right? And you compare it to something like a BC partnership. In a term loan, we basically just make, you know, interest, right? But in a BC partnership, what happens is the entire, you know, repayment of the customer comes to us. We then split it, you know, by taking our share of the interest and then passing on commission to, you know, the fintech partner that we are working with, right? So, basically, we become a pass-through mechanism in that case, right? So, net-net, basically, the amount of profit that you end up making in both situations, as long as obviously the commercials are, you know, agreed the same, is the exact same thing, right? So, similarly, in a co-lending scenario, right? Usually, the way it is structured is, you know, the fintech basically ends up, or the NBFC that we're working with ends up, you know, directly splitting, you know, their share from the, you know, repayments which come in, right? And we don't have to pass through a lot of or very minuscule amount of commission to them, you know, in certain cases, right? So I think it's just because of different business models that we can deploy when we are partnering with a fintech. I think, you know, top line can differ largely with that, right? If we, as an example, if you look at Apollo, maybe a few years back, right, our, you know, our revenue was quite significant. And the reason was that because, you know, we had not started doing any form of term loans or co-lending at that point in time, right? It was largely only doing BC partnerships. So there our revenue looked really, really, you know, significant, right? But at the same point in time, you know, if you look at our fee and commission expenses, they were pretty high. So I think those are the, you know, two things you have to kind of look at very closely.
Okay. Yeah, actually my second question was also that you know, you've been a very tech heavy NBFC, right? So I wanted to ask that besides funds, because funds can be provided
Yeah.
by absolutely any other NBFC in a
Yeah.
co-lending partnership. So what benefits or tech is Apollo Finvest bringing to the table so that the co other NBFC says, you know, that we want to partner with Apollo Finvest and like not anybody else, just we like to focus with partnership with Apollo.
Yeah, absolutely. That's a fantastic question. I think you are absolutely right, right? There are 10,000 NBFCs in the country today. Right. You know, realistically, you know, at least 500 of them would have decent amount of AUM and capital to deploy, right? So I think why do fintechs not partner with, you know, all of those guys, and why do they come to us where, you know, we probably are, you know, one of the smaller ones out there? I think the answer is, you know, truly tech, right? Because tech and experience, because, you know, the thing is, what sometimes people feel is that tech is just a one-time effort, right? You just integrate and then everything just happens magically. Well, the reality is actually kind of different because not only do you have to integrate, which with Apollo usually takes 1 week, with a, you know, any other NBFC out there, it'll take like 6 to 8 months, right? Let's say you get over that, right? You know, you partner with somebody and say that, okay, maybe they'll give me cheaper form of capital and let me take the effort of doing 6 to 8 months, you know, of integration. But the problem doesn't end there, right? Because usually, you know, when, you know, whenever we use, like, just to give you an example, right? When you use your phone or your laptop, right? Just because the software has been made once, it doesn't mean it doesn't have bugs or doesn't go wrong, right? So you usually want somebody whose tech is really, really stable, right? So as an example, a lot of people, you know, may prefer a MacBook versus, you know, I don't know, a Windows laptop, right? Sometimes because they feel like maybe a Windows may not be as stable, right? It's not about, you know, both have software, right? And that's what I mean. So fundamentally, when it comes to, you know, Apollo, not only do you end up going live much faster, right? It's almost multifold faster, right? Like 1 week versus 8 months is, you know, it's a night and day difference. But I think in the end of the day, also the experience of the software itself is much better, right? There is little to no downtime, as an example. You know, in case there are some queries and your tech team needs to talk to somebody, they can just get on the phone, make sure that at the same point in time, you know, the software is always smooth, essentially, right? In case there is any regulatory change happening from RBI, you know, we are pretty much first in class to kind of deploy those things. Whereas, you know, for other people, again, any kind of change, right, is basically, again, 2 quarters gone in kind of executing it and implementing it, right? So it's a continuous partnership, right? Anything to do with tech, right, I think is something which has to be not only built once, but maintained to ensure that it is bug-free and highly efficient, right? So that's the reason why people were, you know, always happy and want to partner with us. And usually the feedback that we always observe is that people want to do, you know, their high quality customers with us, because one of the things about, you know, retail lending, especially in the digital space, which a lot of people don't realize but is absolutely true, right, is, you know, this is a space which is truly looking after the people who are unbanked in the first place, right? Like, they aren't getting access to loans from banks. Now, amongst that base as well, right, it's divided into multiple layers. There are people who are, you know, somewhat on the brink, and people who, let's say, would get a loan from many, many fintechs, right? And there are people who are on the absolute brink, right? Who maybe only 10% of even fintechs are serving, as an example, right? So if you're targeting, you know, the people who are the cream that this industry can cater to, right? You want to deliver the best user experience to them, because if you don't, they will actually just take a loan from your competitor, right? So there, you don't have the luxury of, you know, taking time, APIs failing. It has to be a red carpet user experience. The more friction you give the user, the more likelier a good user is to bounce and a bad user is to continue, right? Because psychologically, if you think about it, if you're a good user and the minute you see a lot of friction, you won't proceed, right? Because you'll be like, I can just take a loan from anybody. Like, I don't have to deal with this. A bad user will probably persist through all the bugs and issues and actually end up taking the loan no matter what, because nobody else is lending to him, right? So it has ramifications across the board, not only for your own engineers and your own speed and your own scalability and your own stability, but also the quality of book is directly impacted. So a lot of fintechs, when they work with us, they primarily, you know, want to work with us for their best portfolio, and which obviously ties back to, you know, the kind of portfolio numbers that we also show, right? In our slide, as an example, our 30 DPD numbers are, you know, 15 times better than the industry, right? Why is that the case? You know, is our underwriting world class, or is it that, you know, we are doing the best that the book, you know, our partners have to offer? It's a combination of both, actually. So, you know, that's how I would think about this.
Thank you so much. Thank you. That answered my question. Thank you.
Welcome.
Thank you so much, Badal Joshi and Mikhil. Now we'll take our next question from Matthew Koshi. Host, please unmute Matthew Koshi.
Hey, hi, Mikhil. I'm a shareholder from around 3 years plus.
Yeah,
I
yeah.
have consistently seen Apollo having this policy, right, that we won't directly compete with our custom clients, right? Now with Apollo Cash, we are changing that policy, right? Why is the logic of this pivot, and will it be harmful in the longer term? And second is that second question is that, like, at the we have been doing multiple initiatives, right? But the sales growth, right? I mean, revenue growth is not coming from 2 3 years. Like, it has moved up after many quarters, right? And then again, it has started coming down. So at least on a longer period, we would want some growth in revenue as well, right? That's the only way in which company can also grow, right? If it has to grow to a certain size, right?
You are absolutely correct, right? I think so. Basically, to talk about Apollo Cash, and I tried to explain that in the presentation as well, but I'll kind of double down on it, right? Why are we doing Apollo Cash, and what has changed in our stance, right? So fundamentally, I think over the last multiple years, right, we've always got a lot of, not only inside our own company, right, but obviously from outside investors as well, we've got a lot of requests, let's put it this way, to go direct. And we've always kind of said no, because we didn't feel, that was the best time. We didn't feel that was the best strategy, right? Despite obviously, my own personal background in building, multiple, kind of consumer-facing, consumer-first businesses, right? With obviously Hotstar, Farmeasy, things like that, right? But I think we didn't do that because the rationale always was, at least for the first 6 7 years of the industry, and I think roughly it's been about 8 9 years of the industry, right? So I would say for the first 6 to 7 years in the industry, right, if I have to be very honest, I saw probably close to zero, companies in the first 6 7 years of the industry making any kind of profit, or certainly more than 5% ROE, right? So if I had to give a general blanket statement, one thing was for certain, I didn't see any kind of business model in the digital lending space showing consistent levels of performing performance other than frankly Apollo's, right? And if you look at the kind of ROE that we delivered, I personally believe that it was best in class when it comes to fintech in India especially, because largely, other companies were doing a lot of experiments which weren't working out, essentially, right? So that gave us a very strong signal that there are no learnings right now in the industry which, can be distilled into basically going direct and, basically creating a direct retail book which actually makes money, right? I think over the last couple of years, specifically what we saw, and I think two big things happened. One was obviously RBI coming in and curbing in, first loss guarantee. And secondly, I think equity in the world, at a certain point in time became difficult to come by because interest rates across the world kind of increased, right? Especially, with what happened in the US, right? Because a lot of the equity stuff which happens, at least in the startup universe in India, is reflective of the, interest rates in the US, right? So because of these two things converging, I think a lot of players in the industries actually just disappeared, right? So if today I was to see the number of players who are active in the industry in the digital lending space, I would say it's a almost close to 80 to 85% reduction, right? So that's a significant cleanup in the industry. But at the same point in time, there's a very big silver lining that over the last couple of years, we've observed that there are almost, four or five companies which over the last 2 to 3 years have shown consistent levels of profitability and creating sensible portfolios, which I think can be sustainable, right? And we know this because we examined these companies deeply, where we worked with them through term loans. We did, warehousing structures with them, maybe BC partnerships, co-lending partnerships, different ways in which we kind of collaborated. And what we saw in their financials, we kind of doubled down by actually partnering with them and observing, those loans are on our own books to make sure that this was not a mirage and this was reality, right? And after doing that for a couple of years, we kind of understood that now there is a very clear direction in which you can kind of end up going to essentially end up creating not only a large business, but most importantly, creating a very ROE positive business, which is, you know, having good margins as well, right? So that is the rationale as to why we are going with Apollo Cash today, right? And to make sure that we end up getting to this point much sooner than the rest of the industry, right? Which is, you know, many players have taken 6, 7, 8, 9 years to get there, right? Now, how do we accelerate ourselves to be where somebody else took 8 years? How do I make sure that I reach there in 2, right? It's an ambitious target, right? But I think two things which help us over here, right? One is we have a database of 20 lakh plus, you know, retail loans that we have done over the last 8, 9 years for us to learn from, right? At the same point in time, we are hiring talent from the industry of people who themselves either at their company or in their personal capacity have demonstrated that they are experts in their field, specifically in digital lending. So what learnings we would have over by doing this, you know, maybe by hiring, you know, people with maybe a couple of years experience, if we hire people with, you know, maybe 3, 4 years, or I would say 5, 6 years experience, right? Essentially, we can reach there much, much, much faster. So now, that's where I would say that right now for us is a time of, you know, heavy investments into our team. In fact, we've already, you know, hired a bunch of people, you know, in this quarter as well. And we're expecting that to continue as well in the coming months. So again, do I expect the number of employees of the company to go up significantly? Answer is no. I just expect our quality levels to, you know, rise up significantly as we double down on getting people from the industry while keeping the count of employees more or less, I would say, you know, similar to what we are today. But with all the learnings that we have and the right talent that we bring on board to accelerate our journey into where we want to go, specifically with Apollo Cash, I think now is the time for us to do it. Basically, our philosophy as a company, right, is we don't think of, you know, very honestly speaking, we don't like doing experiments where, you know, we believe the chances of failure are significantly higher. We only head in directions where we know that it's not a question of if we will succeed, it will be a question of when we will succeed, right? And for us, the sample size is once we see, you know, closely a few companies doing this and we understand deeply how they have done these things, you know, by examining them very, very closely and working with them very closely, that's when we kind of double down and decide that we want to head in this direction. So, you know, just giving you some picture as to how the thought process was to head in this direction.
On my other question of revenue growth of on over three years, right, roughly, right? I mean,
yeah.
So on a long term, we would expect some sort of revenue growth, right, in the company.
Yeah. I think our hope is basically, you know, that's the reason why we're, you know, investing, you know, in things like Apollo Cash, right? It is our bet, you know, over the next 4 to 5 years, that is our bet that is going to be, you know, one of the big drivers of the business, right? Because revenue growth now will be largely driven essentially by AUM growth. And for AUM growth to happen, you know, we will need, you know, larger and larger margins to be able to obviously, you know, take on, you know, larger and larger amounts of debt. You know, today, obviously, the debt to equity of the company is almost close to zero, right? So I think there is a huge headway in front of us, right? You know, conservatively in the industry, I think I've seen people, you know, go up to 2.5, 3x, right? So I think there is a lot of headroom for us. I think, you know, like I said earlier as well, I think we are looking at, you know, where obviously our partners are doing a good job to deploy, you know, more capital in that direction, and, you know, allow us to obviously scale up in those partnerships as well. At the same point in time, you know, we feel, you know, in probably 12 to 15 months time, you know, Apollo Cash will be in a place for us to even, you know, deploy more capital, right? So I think we will start seeing that now.
Yeah, got it. So, with this model, we would be what will be our distinction from other NBFCs? Is it just the tech that will distinguish us from other NBFCs? Like we are now, like our business model is now similar to any other NBFC, right? Except that we have a better tech. Like earlier, we had a distinction from other NBFCs, right?
I would say I don't think of it that way. I think of it as, it's not one or the other. So as an example, our platform business continues to be our bread and butter, right? So I'm not expecting, if I had to give you a general statement, over the next 12 months, I would expect our platform business to be anywhere between 90-95% of our AUM. So that kind of continues. Apollo Cash is more towards, the future that we see as, an addition and another vertical for us to kind of help us scale up even more, right? So I think of this as an addition of a business line rather than something which is competing between the two things.
I got it. No more questions from my side.
Sure.
Thank you so much, Matthew Koshi and Mikhil. We'll take our next question from Mr. Paras. Host, please unmute Mr. Paras.
Hey, hi, Mikhil.
Hi.
Congratulations on the application launch. Just wanted to check on how significant will this app be in terms of a contributor to your overall book in the coming years?
Yeah, thanks for that question. I think, as I mentioned, basically our thought process is that this is more towards, where we think the company should be, over the next, say, 2 to 5 years, right? Really, like I think over the next 1 year, I would expect it to be, less than 5 to 10% of our AUM, where the partnership business does continue contributing about 90-95% of, the AUM for us. I think, like I said to Mr. Matthew as well, our thought process really is that we don't see of the two businesses as one or the other. We think of the two businesses as two separate business verticals, where one, the partnership business is, obviously 8, 9 years baked in. So there's a lot of comfort, maturity, knowledge, and, execution chops which we've already built over there. So, long will that continue, right? And I do expect that business to keep growing at the same pace, it has been growing. I think for us, Apollo Cash is a whole separate vertical that we kind of have, where we expect, that growth to also come in. But I expect that to happen over the next, 12 to 15 months of, building a lot of, things inside the platform, obviously getting the right team together for it, essentially. And that will be an additional business line for us. That's how we think about both these two businesses.
Perfect. Thank you. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Paras and Mikhil. We'll take our next question from Mr. Mahavir. Host, please unmute Mr. Mahavir.
Yeah, hi, Mitchell. How are you doing?
I'm good. I'm good. How are you
Okay.
doing?
Good, good, great. Okay, Mitchell, see, historically, we have said that we are going to be very, we are very obsessed with, say, zero CAC, customer acquisition cost of zero. But now, since we are lending Apollo and you are saying that we are going to bring in new hires, it is going to shoot up our expenses a lot, which you insinuated right now. And our profits have been very stagnant in last 3, 4 years. So how are you going to address expenses in relation to profits going forward?
I think one of the things, as you mentioned, right, like our profits have been pretty stable in terms of the last few years, right? And this is, if I had to just put it out there, right, this is the shot that we are taking with Apollo Cash to really jump onto the next level, right? So if I had to just tell you, right, like fundamentally the way I think about it is, we always have two different paths which Apollo could have taken this year, right? One was, status quo, which is, continue the partnership business the way it is. And we really had absolutely no requirement at this point in time to, delve into any other business. And
Yeah.
it would have been like a stable, double-digit ROE kind of business, right? Which again, I would say is not too bad. And I think a lot of our competitors would love to be, in our position over there, right? But I think what we wanted to do right now is build from a place of stability and strength, right? So we didn't want to be in a position where, we have to think of a new idea as an example, right? So for us, it was a very organic kind of, direction to move into, right? Where we felt we had, the knowledge, the insights, to do this very, very organically. And I felt also the right time for the industry itself. The number of competitors significantly dropping. Now there are actually people I can hire in the industry who I can, put my hat on and be like, this guy knows what he's doing, right? Because there are companies out there which are actually doing a good job. If somebody, if we had thought about, like one of the things, if you notice about the company, right, with us, we've historically always hired people pretty much having, less than 2-3 years experience, right? And always we were asked this question, like, why don't you hire, why don't you invest, etc. And the real answer was always that, we didn't feel like there's any point to hire people who don't know what they're doing. And that was not a slight on them. It was, the reality of the entire industry, right? Because nobody
yeah.
knew what is, you don't know what you don't know, right? The only way I can know for sure that the opposite person knows what they're talking about is through numbers and results, right? If you tell me you're very good at risk, then show me the numbers for it. So that's just one example, right? Like, especially now when I talk about marketing, I'll ask you, like, as a marketer, what's the CAC you can get to, right? What's the CAC for cost per disbursement as an example? So there are various metrics in which, if we had to evaluate somebody, we just couldn't get the right person in because their numbers were all, all over the place where the unit economics didn't make sense. And that was representative of the entire industry. Other than probably a business like ours, which was a platform business, right? I think, like I mentioned, over the last few years, we did see that there are now viable business models that we can execute with people who have done this in the past to be able to get to a much higher level of AUM, much higher level of revenue. And we can, over a course of the next, 3 to 5 years, not only have this one very solid, mature partnership business, but maybe in 4 or 5 years' time, have two really mature businesses, right? Which is, one is great for partnerships, where we keep learning from the rest of the industry. And, at the same point in time, is almost like a bread and butter. At the same point in time, Apollo Cash can give us something, exponentially, scalable, right? If we get this right, obviously, the fruits are, the risk is worth the effort. And like I said earlier as well, right, like our fundamental thinking when it comes to lending or financial services is, it's not a game of, if I had to put it bluntly, right, it's not a game of innovation. It's a game of efficiency, right? So for us, when we thought about this decision, it wasn't about, let's do this, we may be successful. The idea was, let's do this, we will be successful. We don't know in what time frame. Hopefully in the next, 2 to 3 years, there will be, significant data backing, these words. But how can we make that 3-year time period into, say, 2 years, and we get right people on board right now? It's okay. We make the investments, right? We take the expenses on, right? But at the same point in time, if this pays off, it will be, again, us going towards, significantly higher double-digit ROEs, right? That's what we want to get to finally as a business, right? We want to get to a position where, we have debt to equities of, 3x, and we are giving consistent, 20% ROE, right? That's my personal vision. That's where I want to see the business go. And the only way it will get to those places, right, is if we are able to, have these multiple businesses that we build over a period of time. And the next business that we want to build, which we feel we'll be able to, deliver success with, is Apollo Cash.
Yeah, I completely understand that. And the other thing, you just said that initially Apollo Cash is going to be a 90-10 business, wherein only it is going to contribute around 10% of the AUM. Let's say it goes to 50% in the next 2 years. So looking at our past or historical business model, which was, having partnerships, how do you think that would erode the trust between Apollo and its partners? Or how do you think it will pivot us to the next level, as in getting more clients from their side and we going through the data and checking it out for further lending purposes.
I think the good news is that, you know, what one of the things that we kind of did when we obviously went direct is, you know, we did it well and truly by, you know, getting our partners on board, right? It wasn't like a surprise to them. You know, we did very openly, honestly, have conversations with them. And we've been very thankful. Actually, a lot of them were very, very helpful as well by giving us tips as to, you know, these are the some of the things you need to watch out for, right? And, you know, some of them also just said that finally, you know, you guys are doing these things. So I think for us, we were pleasantly surprised as to, you know, how, you know, our partners have also, you know, taken this, you know, taken us going, you know, and I think just simply put, I think the lesson for us, which I think why this reaction was, you know, positive is, I think, just honest communication. I think that's really how, you know, partnerships always have to work, right? If we're doing something and this is something which we've internally taken a call of, we have to be very candid and open with, you know, our partnerships. And, you know, I think the reason they didn't feel threatened is because we were very open about it and spoke about how we are planning to do these things and without compromising, you know, any of the, I would say, promises which both of us have made to each other in this partnership, right? I think, and I think given that Apollo has been doing this for 8-9 years and there is a bit of, you know, legacy and trust which has been built in, I think that level of transparency, you know, and active communication probably helped smooth this over, right? And, you know, to all of our, you know, delight, honestly, the number of partners that we lost in this transition is zero. You know, so that itself goes, you know, to kind of add testament, you know, to what basically I'm saying. What was your other question?
I guess you have already answered that in some ways.
Yeah.
Also, you know, we are seeing this Anthropic thing. I don't know exactly how it works. But let's say I would the simple question I would frame out here is how we are a non-imitable business and how can or cannot Anthropic disrupt us in some ways. I mean, because we have big companies like Jio and others, you know, which can easily take us out. Or I don't know. Of course, we are very positive and like, but how would that affect us going forward?
Honestly, I think of AI in two ways, right? One is, you know, let's say when I started out my career 15 years back, right, in building digital companies, right? I think, honestly, you needed probably few things to start a company. You know, one is obviously an idea. Second is capability to build out that idea. And third is, you know, relentless execution. I think now, pretty much, you know, I would say you just need an idea and you need relentless execution. Because anybody can build anything. I genuinely believe that today, right? Anybody can build anything. You know, I think we are going to be heading in a space of, you know, I would say, you know, something I like to call is PaaS, right? Which is personal software as a service, right? I think people are going to build their own software. Like if, you know, you have an idea and you need like a software which, you know, primarily just solves your use case, you will just build an app and it'll probably take you like 5-10 minutes. I think that's where we are headed. I think, honestly, it's already here. I think it's not just exposed to pretty much the larger population, but I know that internally in the company, we've seen some of these things. So, you know, that's the present, you know, it's just not, you know, I think I like that phrase, which says that, you know, the future is already here. It's just, you know, some people are living in it and some people are not yet there. Right. So I think that's how I think about AI in general, but, you know, the other hand of AI is I think it's going to make it more and more difficult for legacy companies to do digital underwriting because, you know, I'm expecting, and we are already seeing this, by the way, the amount of fraud which is going up is, you know, unbelievable, right? Unbelievable is, you know, an understatement, right? And this is the kind of fraud where the reason why I say it's going to be a big problem to solve for is I don't think it's a human problem. You know, even if you put humans basically, you know, doing video KYC or you put humans, you know, looking at applications, things like that, I think they're all going to get fooled because it's so authentic that there is no way a human can determine, you know, that's an AI image or that's an AI video or anything like that, right? So I think we are headed towards a space where I feel the advantage for tech companies, not only Apollo, I would say like any tech company pretty much, because of the DNA of those companies to be able to adapt to these problem statements and be active in finding solutions to these things and being open to experimenting and figuring out, how do you battle these things much faster than legacy companies whose DNA just isn't, to think of tech first, solutions first, right? I think we are headed towards a world where tech companies will become stronger and stronger and stronger, where I would not be surprised if a lot of CEOs of many, many companies by default have to be tech first, right? And I know that's a very big statement to make, but I feel that is, the world that we are getting into. And, I don't yet feel that, people are realizing what AI means, for everybody. Just one simple example I'll give you is that, imagine a bank giving out a 30-year-old home loan today. I worry for those banks.
Absolutely.
What's going to happen 30 years from today? Who's going to have a job? Who's not going to have a job? What's going to get automated? What's not going to be automated? It's troubling to think of that. So I think we are headed towards very uncharted waters, but the only way to, navigate these things is be on the bleeding edge, always be learning, and surround yourself with people who are, deeply invested in being on the cutting edge of these things. That's what we have to do.
Absolutely. Love that perspective. And lastly, Mikhil, see our expenses are going to go up. Our profits, do you think our profits are going to remain stagnant from here, or our profits are going to take care of the upcoming expenses? And also, after deducting all those expenses, do you think our profits are going to go are going to move up from here, or are they going to remain the same? I know you don't give guidance, but just where could we land basically?
No, I usually did not give guidance in the past because, I used to be quietly optimistic. But this time I will be very real. I do expect our investments in employee expenses to go up. And I do feel that will have an impact on our profits. But I do strongly believe that this is the right point in the, in the history of the company to make these investments. So, we are going to double down on that. And, our big bet is that, this will all pay off. 24 to 36 months from today, where the ramp up that we'll see will make all of this seem like one of the best ROE or ROI investments that we've made in probably the 40 years of the company. That's the big bet that we're making, and we're pretty confident that we'll be able to land this in the way which our shareholders will be happy.
Great, great, Miguel. I usually follow you on Twitter, and there was one line that you posted that until death, all defeat is psychological. So wish you all the luck, all the best. Do great. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you so much, Mr. Mahavir and Mikhil. We'll take our next question from Mr. Nitin Sethi. Host, please unmute Mr. Nitin Sethi.
Hello. Hello.
Yes, please go ahead.
Sir, my question is that we are launching Apollo Cash, but how we are going to differentiate from other plain vanilla loan apps? Because there are thousands of loan apps on Play Store. Because something like Jar app, which provides gold savings, so that people are sticky to your app. They take loan again and again from your same app. But because of the plain vanilla app like Apollo Cash, how we are going to differentiate it from others?
Great question. I think so, Nitin, I'll tell you one of the things that we've realized very honestly by being in this space pretty much since the start, right? Now let me give you what I expect to happen by looking at the past. So over the last 8 9 years, like I mentioned, right, we partnered with almost 100 fintechs, right? And out of the 100 fintechs, if I had to say the number of fintechs which have actually survived for 8 years would be probably less than 5%, right? So, let me tell you this, that I genuinely believe, no, many people can start lending, right? Lending is something everybody can do, and it's not a big deal, right? Ultimately, you have money, you can figure out, you know, some partnership and start lending, basically, right? But I think, like physical lending, I would say digital lending is even more difficult, right? Because I believe the amount of fraud, manipulation, you know, the amount of algorithms you need to build, you know, it seems very easy. You know, just build an app and start lending and what's the big deal, right? There are 10,000 apps like this. What I really observe is how many of these companies are going to be around in 2 years' time, right? And I feel the number will be 80% lesser, right? So that's how I feel, you know, about competition, right? Now, number two thing is you asked, how will we differentiate ourselves, right? I think we will ourselves learn, right? It's been 2 to 3 months right now for us, having just got started on this journey, right? So far, you know, I fundamentally believe that this space is so underserved that it's like offering, you know, water in a desert, if you ask me. Now, let me give you, you know, a simple example. Roughly, we are getting about 300 to 400 downloads a day with zero marketing, right? And why are we doing zero marketing, by the way? Because we are yet perfecting the app, right? There are a lot of things we are learning, a lot of things we are deploying, a lot of features we want to fix, you know, a lot of small changes which are coming. I think, you know, if you see our app updates, I wouldn't be surprised if we are, you know, at a run rate of every 3-4 days, you know, there's an app update which is coming out, right? So, you know, I think, at least if you ask me this question today, I feel, given the demand that we are seeing, right, I feel very strongly that it's like offering a glass of cold water in a desert. And there is rampant demand, right? I think India is a credit-starved country, right? And this goes back to our original thesis of digital lending, right? I think this is not a space, again, for innovation. I don't think this is a space for trying to differentiate for differentiation reason, right? I think this is a space of efficient execution. Who is able to acquire the customer at the least amount of cost? Who is able to manage fraud? Who is able to manage risk? Who is able to manage collections? Who's able to manage cost of, you know, capital, and who's able to manage employee cost? It's actually as simple as that. And inside each of these things that I've mentioned, right, it's a whole division, you know, doing, you know, simple and complex things to get to world-class results, right? That's how I think. So, you know, again, I think one of the misconceptions about, you know, digital lending, or I think lending in general, is that there is some innovation or there is some, you know, unique thing you should do. You know, one of the things I always recommend our partners is don't do anything innovative, because the risk reward ratio doesn't make sense, right? You do something innovative, your book, you know, becomes terrible, it's over, right? There's no extra 1-2% ROI you will end up making, you know, if you do something innovative. Just by doing, you know, I would say the basics, but doing it in a highly intelligent, efficient manner, you know, you can do things better. Like, I'll give you one example, right? So when I say, you know, let's talk about underwriting, right? Which is the key. When we are doing Apollo Cash underwriting, we've seen, by the way, people in this space who start doing underwriting and they don't use the bureau at all, right? They will directly be like, no, we are building, you know, like a magic algorithm, which is purely going to underwrite people looking at SMS data and device data, right? While that's very noble of them, you know, ultimately it results in disastrous books, which maybe sounds, you know, very interesting, that we are trying to do something out of the box and maybe the results in the end will be great because you're saving that money from a bureau perspective, right? The cost of obviously running the bureau, ultimately the cost is way too high for the result, right? It's almost like you're reinventing the wheel when you don't have to. So when we think about those things, we are under no illusion. We use the bureau, you know, in addition to the bureau and obviously your income information, we then look at things like device data. We look at alternate data about you on the internet. We look at, telco data. We look at social media data. We look at variety of factors, right? What apps you're using, where are you spending, all of those things that we will see to augment our underwriting better, right? So the idea is always to augment the traditional ways to become 10x better than that, not reinvent the wheel by, just basically destroying the basics, right? That's not the idea. So, I hope that gives you a flavor of how we are thinking about this.
Thank you, sir. But my essence is that because I know you are saying that innovation is not required in this industry because demand is so much high. But sometimes differentiating a factor so that we can get more data about a customer just by giving some in mutual fund investment, we can also offer loan against mutual fund. Even you have to capture the more of the insight of that customer. If that is the
I mean, these are things that we are open to doing in the future, right? Like, see, let's put it this way, right? So far, we've not seen any resistance of customers sharing data with us. I think everybody in the digital lending space understands that if they need to provide a loan, they have to share their data, right? They have to share their phone data, and we're very transparent in the app about it, by the way. It's not like some there's underlying APIs, etc., to do these things, right? Like if you use our app and download it, in the very first screen, you'll notice we'll be very clear that we need this information in order to proceed with your underwriting. If you don't give us the data, we can't go ahead in your underwriting, basically, right? So we've seen like a 98% acceptance of that screen, right? Like that's actual data. So if we do see that number, drop below an acceptable number, we will obviously think about, solving that problem. But, today, data tells us that that's not a problem that we have to solve.
Actually, sir, I have been associated with some finance, most of the finance companies, and the loan bracket which we are offering under 1 lakh rupees loan. The customer who wants this type of loan are not eco, but you can say the language friendly to English. They are like more like they need it, but they do not know how to get it. When they are really genuine customers, you can say about any housemaid or any other person who is now a gig worker. They want the loan, but they do not understand the language or what documents that this app is demanding. So, are you working on something like this? Because the loan bracket is so low, because and the mostly there are gig workers that want this type of loan.
See, the way we are doing this, right, is that because we are in early stages, honestly, we are talking to a lot of our customers, right? We are like our operations team is actually, calling out a lot of these customers to understand who are these customers and, are they facing any difficulty, especially if they get stuck during a loan application, right? That's like, I would say, when we do things, very, very in early stages, we are big fans of doing things that don't scale, right? So in that sense, let's say building up from zero is one of our specialties, right? So we are very, very close to understanding exactly what our customers want. Okay. So if we again we do get insights that they do want, changes in the language of the app, we will solve for it. Right now, from our interaction with the users, the way it works, right, is when you download our app, right? And if your entire phone, as an example, is in Hindi, as an example, the app gets translated to Hindi. So it is getting solved for as long as your entire OS is in that language, which I would expect if a person is not expect fluent in English, that's what would happen. Like I have seen my own helps phones. Some of them who are not fluent in English, they prefer their phones to be in a local language of their choice. And our app also gets translated in that language.
Thank you, sir. Just not to offend anyone, because sometimes we sit in the metro cities and do not understand the real rural or semi-urban India. That's where the loan demands actually is for the small loans.
No, you are absolutely right, right? Like, I think that hits the nail on the head. We definitely have to put ourselves in the shoe of the real customer. Then only we can serve them, correctly. You can't sit in a office and assume that you know everything about them. You should meet your customers, you should talk to your customers, figure out who your power customers are, Oh, you know, you're absolutely right, right? I think I could write a, entire blog about, how I think about you should be, in love with your customers and make them know that. But I think that's for a, different conversation.
Definitely love that, sir, if you put a blog about it, because how do you think about it? How do you treat your customer? How do you assess your customer is very important. And we want to know about how do you assess your customer.
Absolutely. We'll keep that in mind.
Thank you.
Thank you so much, Mr. Nitin. Thank you so much, Mikhil. It appears that we have addressed all the questions for today. If anyone has any further questions, please feel free to write it to us on info@apolloinvest.com and our team will be happy to assist you. So with that, we would like to wind up our Q3 FY25-26 earnings call. Thank you so much, everybody, for joining us today and for your continued support and interest in Apollo's journey. Have a great day.
So, can we end the session?
Yes, host, we can end the session.
Okay.